The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio at 3 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 17th of April, 2026. We have a busy show lined up for you, a nice mix of content for you on this Friday morning. We're going to kick off the first hour with our Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you in a moment, but first I want to invite you to get involved in the conversation. 086 60 25 000, that's our WhatsApp and text number if you want to drop us a message. You can also give us a call if you prefer, 07491 25 000. Or email comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch today's show, as you can every single morning, YouTube covers you for your smart TV, your Fire Stick and your mobile devices. Just typing Highland Radio Ireland, and we're on Facebook as well. Right, let's say good morning to Nicola Mann, owner of Mode Embroidery and Print in Calais. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg and listeners.
Thank you so much for being our guest today. Cian O'Hagan is chair of Ogra Sinn Féin in Donegal. Good morning to you, Cian. Welcome to the Friday panel.
Good morning, Greg, Gormila.
And also James Ward, news editor at the Irish Daily Mail. Hiya, James.
Hey, Greg.
Right, okay. Lots of speculation on the future of Micheál Martin as leader of Fianna Fáil. James O'Connor, Albert Dolan. They're openly calling for more decisive direction and even more now since I posed this question. I'll start with you, James. Is Micheál Martin facing a genuine leadership heave? And I suppose we can lead on to a conversation about the future of the government and perhaps it running its distance. But is Micheál Martin a dead man walking?
In the short term, it doesn't look like it. In the long term, I think there's big question marks over him leading Fianna Fáil into the next election. Just this morning, we've had Derek Leary and Jim O'Callaghan saying that they have confidence in his position as the Fianna Fáil leader. They would be probably the two most likely challengers if there was any heave. And what seems to have happened is similar to the controversy around Jim Gavin and his selection as the presidential candidate for Fianna Fáil. A lot of hot air, a lot of anger, and not much direction in terms of a heave. Kind of, it almost reflects kind of what went on in the protests last week. Is there's a great sense of dissatisfaction, a lot of unhappiness, and a desire for change, but no real kind of idea of how that change should be achieved. So for the time being, I think he is safe, and there's a number of reasons for that. One is the EU presidency that is coming up, and there's a feeling that that he should be allowed to see that through, and that it's not the time, it would reflect poorly on Ireland to have a change of Taoiseach right before we take that up in June until the end of the year. Another reason is the current this fuel crisis isn't going anywhere, and it's a bit of a poison chalice at the time being, because we're seeing mass protests now, and we're really only at the outset of it. And it does look like things are only going to get worse from here.
So do you think it's not that there isn't a will, maybe, by some of the people you mentioned and others to take over? They might say, well, if I want to be serious about my legacy, now's not the time to do that. Let Micheál Martin take the heat.
Well, that's exactly it. And what I find interesting is that the letter penned by the three young Fianna Fáil TDs, I think, really sort of hit a nerve in terms of talking about the social contract being stretched to breaking point. The idea that hard work and getting a good education doesn't provide the rewards that it used to. I think they tapped into something that really was kind of fueling those protests last week. And a little bit disappointing that all of that noise in Fianna Fáil kind of seems to be petering out. But I do think they're going to find it very difficult to knock on doors at the next election and now make the case and argue that Micheál Martin is the man that should be leading the party in the country.
Nicola Mahon, do you think he will continue in his position? Do you think he should continue in his position?
Well, I do think he will last the distance, but I do think there's serious work would need to be done to reconnect with the voters and the general public, especially the people outside Dublin. Is it the right time for change? It's such a volatile time in the world, markets and politics. I don't know. But as somebody said today, nobody else is putting their hands up for the job, so someone has to do it.
Why are Fianna Fáil taking all the heat in this situation? They're in a coalition government. I know he's currently the Taoiseach, but Fine Gael always seemed to manage to get through these controversies pretty much untarnished.
I suppose we always, if it's management, Micheál's seen as the Taoiseach, so they always go for the head honcho. That's from my experience anyway.
The issues within Fianna Fáil seem to have been rumbling on for a long time in terms of a connection between the leadership of the party and the grassroots. You know, it's for years and years and years ago I was hearing this claim, and it would seem with the controversy over the presidency and this latest controversy that sort of separation is still being felt within Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, it has been. This has been going on for years, but they seem to always come out and get back into government. So the people still seem to vote for them, and it's happening. So I'm not.
Cian, I know your main focus is on Sinn Féin as a Sinn Féin member, but I mean, you know, watching on, what's your views about what's going on within Fianna Fáil? Now, this isn't the media stirring anything up. All of this conversation has been sparked from within, it has to be said.
Absolutely not. And I think as well, it would be foolish and misleading to direct all the attention at Micheál Martin. These are decisions and policies that have been developed by an administration and been carried out over a number of years. And I would certainly say as well, just on the back of James's point, I think Fianna Fáil have been struggling to knock doors for more than just the last five years and their canvassing and campaigning. So yes, I think it's definitely misleading to direct this at one man and certainly at one party. This is a seesaw coalition government that have developed very similar policies and enacted very little change and have had a significant time amount of time to do so. So I think definitely it would be misleading and certainly inaccurate to blame one individual in Micheál Martin as the Taoiseach and one party in Fianna Fáil as the primary government party for the pressures enacted in Ireland at the moment.
Well, Micheál Martin might get on to Mary Lou McDonald, because there was an awful lot of talk about potentially her time being spent as leader of Sinn Féin. She survived that, so maybe she has some tips for Micheál Martin on how he can do it too, although he's an expert at this stage.
Well, I'm sure she would welcome his job role anytime he feels the need to step down. But I think more importantly, Sinn Féin are in a position, obviously at the back of the last vote of no confidence, it fell. But it showed that the nature of the government, both within the independents that have supported them and substantiated their position, also the fact that independents who ran off the notion that they were going to challenge the government and give people a voice for change, who ended up with the likes of the Lowry independents, just being another vessel for a government voice under a new brand name. So we're seeing very much of the same old politics of withholding power and maintaining the governmental position at the expense of the needs of the people.
James, are the government being given a fair crack of the whip, do you think? I mean, auto diesel, as we called it, of course, 32 cent down, petrol 27 cent down, green diesel 7.4. You said in your commentary that this isn't going away anytime soon. We hear the potential for aircraft fuel shortages in 6 weeks. Is it not prudent for a government to see what it can do now, but also leave some capacity for the future?
Absolutely. And I think that, to be fair to the government, I think that is the approach they tried to take. We had the initial announcement of €250 million worth of measures and cuts. That was followed quite quickly by the 700 or the 505 million announcement earlier in the week. That was really a result of the pressure put on by the protests. But the approach, I think, was we'll do what we can now. Let's see where we are in October for the budget. We want to be able to keep some measures in reserve. Now, their hand was forced. There was a strong argument to say that the communication around everything has been extremely poor and that they didn't get across what they were doing for the public. That they knew at the time the €200 million package was announced that more was going to be needed. They didn't make that clear to the public. They didn't make it clear that there was already another suite of measures in the works. And it may have been better to do that, wrapped together as one big announcement that could have pleased everybody, And yes, so there's a, the government is under a lot of pressure in terms of handling this crisis, and it is going to get worse. So they've wanted to keep something in reserve. But some of the commentary made during the protests only inflamed the situation, and the communications has been a real problem.
Can I put ask you a little bit further on that? Because that's something I can't get my head around, because there is no end of people involved in PR with the government, many of them former journalists, it has to be said. The communication has been brutal. It absolutely brutal. So even in terms of who they met in, you know, the protesters, no, we'll have the big boys, we'll have the IFA, we'll have the head of the Hall of Ears, the rest of you can go because you might be associated with someone we don't like, blah, 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 blah. You know, and also almost like an arrogance that we know what's best and we'll tell you when the time's right and you're not going to tell us when to tell you. Where does that poor communication come from? Is it cultural or something? Because as I said right at the beginning of this question, there's a ton of people that know how you communicate with the public on these matters involved.
Yeah, and I think it's partly due to, you'll often hear Leinster House described as a bubble, and that's very true. And I worked there for a number of years myself, and it's very sort of self-involved, and you think you're at the absolute centre of the country and everything that's going on. But there's a whole world outside there. There's a completely different scenario going on outside the doors of Leinster House, on the ground, and in towns and villages across the country that is misjudged and was misjudged, I think, badly during the protests. And there was a desire. Now, some of what went on during the protests shouldn't have happened and was rightly called out by government in terms of blockading oil refineries and ports, and emergency vehicles not being able to get access to hospitals, things like that. So there was a certain amount of anger on the government side that maybe was legitimate, but there was a real failure to read the room. And for the amount of, as you say, the amount of very highly paid advisors who they have on board, is it a case of too many cooks and not getting the clear message out? Are they over-reliant on the advisors and should maybe just try to connect with the people on a more personal level? There's questions to be asked around that as well, I think.
Yeah, what's your views on that, Nicola?
Yeah, I would agree. They should have really, I feel like they should have went and met with the protesters. No one wants to be, I would dare say the protesters don't want to be standing at the set, at the road. They want to be home with their families, doing an honest day's work. So I do really feel that they should have met with them, got this sorted out, come to some kind of agreement, and we wouldn't be sitting the way we are today, roads being blocked, ambulances not getting to destinations, people not getting the appointments. So I do feel the government should have acted faster.
And what do you think, if anything, this government can do to sort of give people, particularly maybe outside of the capitalist sense, that they understand what's going on? I think the home heating hall was it's a primarily west-northwest type of a thing. 800,000 of us do rely on it, though, but nothing really on home heating oil, for an example. And that perhaps makes people feel even more of a separation between the seats of power and what's going on the ground.
Well, something has to be done with it, because like at the end of the day, I don't know about you, I couldn't afford to keep paying €700 for 500 litres of oil. I run a house with five people in it, and I can tell you now that it is straight to the limit, and we are two self-employed people, and two good incomes coming in, and for the first time ever I can feel the stretch. Even like the children are saying it's cold, you know, things like that, because you are making cutbacks in the house, and so it's like going back to the old days, put an extra layer on, and it's not fair. Something has to be done. I do feel like we should. The North has introduced £100 off it for theirs. Someone would just need, they would need to come together and do something for the people. It's not fair the way we're living at this day and age.
Yeah, but back to the communication thing, if it's dragged out of them over the next week or two, it will feel like they're just...
Well, that's where they're not communicating with the people again. So that's where they would need to show leadership going forward, and a stronger, to be more decisive in the community issues.
Cian, how do you think your party's come out of this, Sinn Féin? Because, you know, this was a people's movement, and it was the people who really effectively, I think, put the pressure on the government to increase supports for people. You know, I kind of didn't get really any impression that Sinn Féin had any fingerprints on this at all.
Well, I think Sinn Féin, role in this was simple. It was more so to show the lack of humanity and lack of understanding, I think, with regards to the government's messaging around this. I think they did that very well. The government almost put the blame on the protesters for protesting as if it was an inconvenience rather than they were demanding basic level measures to solve what is developing into an inflamed crisis. And I think more so, not even just the wording that was used with regards to the actions of the protesters and the nature of the protesting. I think the fact that bringing in the Irish Army as a solution or a perceived solution by the Irish government in order to quell these protests, and then only inviting, as you said, Greg, select members and numbers within the communities to come up and basically reveal where their frustration was coming from in Dublin was very, very dismissive. I think Sinn Féin did a very good job in highlighting that. I think with the presence of our elected representatives and our party members at these protests as well, it gave that sort of necessary alleviation and understanding that the government lacked.
But I don't think your party's propositions are really that strong either. Like, what the people want is to know how much petrol and diesel and home heating oil is going to cost. But your party suggested was an additional 25 cent off petrol and diesel, which I don't think went for many people went far enough. But a caller says, here's a question, though. Who were they supposed to talk to when 12 different people are claiming to lead the protest and none of those agreed on what they wanted? Talking to the official unions and organisations is absolutely the sensible move. But, I mean, the logical thing there to do, Nicola, would be you'd say to them, look, this is what's happening in global negotiations. You would say, "Go, we'll meet at 4:00. Go away now and come up with two people that you feel represents this movement, because we can't meet with absolutely everybody. Come back to us and we'll agree if we agree or we don't agree." I mean, that's how you would handle something like that, Nicola. You would engage and put the onus on the protesters to nominate two people that would be agreed on as leading the pack?
Definitely. I would agree 100%. That would have to be done. It's like any committee. There is always one or two people that goes forward. So that's basically what the protesters should have done, delegate two people to go forward and give what they feel that should be in line going forward. And that's where the government then could have come out and said, we will meet with you and hopefully come to some agreement going forward.
A caller says the price of fuel needs to be capped. Government have budgeted for what they expect to generate from fuel for the year. Anything over that should be capped. They're not losing money from reducing prices. They're profiteering on people's miseries. Again, though, James, I'll go back to you on this before our first break. Would any government put a measure in place that they don't know what the cost of it might be? I read in one of the papers today some experts predicting that there is potential, if something doesn't happen soon, for diesel to hit €4 a litre even potentially. I mean, no government's going to put something in situ, are they, that they have no control over that all could run away on them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really sobering figure, isn't it? You know, €4 a litre. And Simon Harris was addressed this issue in the Dáil yesterday during leaders' questions and said, you know, the cost would be many, many billions, but wasn't able to put an exact figure on it. So I think you're right. I'm not sure any government would kind of give write a blank check like that. They could really be held to ransom on down the line. It's a tricky measure, and it can create difficulty for supply as well. So I don't think that is going to be a runner.
Yeah, just because you ever say something and then instantly doubt yourself as to whether you actually read it or not. Because when I saw Nicola gasp, I thought, right, I better make sure this is right. Yeah, diesel prices could hit €4 a litre if there's no quick resolution to the conflict in the Middle East. The government cannot protect against market rises in motor fuel prices indefinitely. A leading academic has warned. Dr. Oliver Brown, a lecturer in accounting in University College Cork's Business School, said that if crude oil prices again rise strongly, then diesel prices will shoot up further. So he's, I mean, that'd be worst case scenario, but there you go. More comments here. Several Fianna Fáil backbenchers are unhappy, but there is only eight putting themselves forward and a challenge needs 12. Micheál Martin's going nowhere until after his term as EU president. How come Fianna Fáil takes the fall but Fine Gael walks away? Is it because Fianna Fáil politicians can't hold their water and Fine Gael are better at keeping things a secret? Anything to that, James? Are Fine Gael better at crisis management?
I think Fine Gael were a bit quieter during the whole thing, and that's how they got away with it.
Say nothing to hear more.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is the fact that we have a Fianna Fáil Taoiseach, and I think if Simon Harris was Taoiseach, we'd be having a different conversation.
Really down to who's in the top seat.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Greg. This government has to be put out. The people of Donegal have had enough. Their houses are falling down around them and out 50, 70, 100 grand of their own money for a rebuild and still not covered for their garage. Only in Donegal this would happen. But we had an election not so long ago and Fianna Fáil did really well here. The pile-on at the moment on a female politician is disgusting. She is a recognised politician as opposed to these far-side keyboard warriors. We'll come back to that. We've seen the tricolour flying prominently at the recent refinery blockades and the street protests. We heard from Donegal-based Senator Eileen Flynn. She raised concerns that this reclaiming of the flag by protesters is actually exclusive and threatening to minority groups. Where do you draw the line between a legitimate display of national identity and using the flag to mark territory or intimidate others? Cian O'Hagan, are you sympathetic to Eileen Flynn's point of view? I think she said she'd be afraid. She would have been afraid to attend these protests if she saw the tricolour.
Well, I can be sympathetic and understanding of her viewpoint, but I would disagree in terms of any elected representative wanting to be afraid or feeling afraid of seeing the presence of their national flag at protests and assuming that there's some kind of ulterior or hateful attachment to that. Sinn Féin have no fear of the Irish tricolour. We've long campaigned for the presence of it and the rightful position of it in our country. And I think it would be unfair to say that all tricolours at these protests have a hateful or a negative attachment to them, or they're used as a symbol of territory marking rather than a sign of simple cultural expression.
Is this a handover from colonialism in that? I can't imagine there's another country in the world whereby, well, maybe there is, sorry, it's such a naive thing for me to say, but whereby, you know, flying a flag is done anything other than proudly, and you accept that some people are perhaps going to misuse it, but you just crack on.
Well, there's no such use, I don't think, or misuse, rather, of the Irish flag, especially at a peaceful protest. And I think
just in relation to that, Cian, just to make sure that I understand fully what you're saying, we have seen the tricolour being put up extensively in areas where there is an IPAS centre or an IPAS centre might be planned for an example. So it has been erected with a view to making the people in IPAS centres understand the views of those that put it up, if that makes sense. But you're okay with that still? You think that is an acceptable use of the flag?
No, with that clarified example, no, I think anything that's made or used to make anyone feel uncomfortable or in any way unwelcome in Ireland should be condemned, and the Irish flag shouldn't be a vessel for that. But I think in the example cited by Eileen Flynn and many other examples in the presence of our national flag throughout our country, it's done in a civic and culturally sound manner. And I think that has to be welcomed. I welcome the presence of more Irish tricolours throughout the nation. So I think it's a very positive thing. And I think what's more important and what's even more condemnable is to see damaged or tattered Irish flags with bits missing that are potentially lying in an unfit state throughout many counties. I think that's even more sad to see. So I would long to see their replacement and their uprising throughout the nation.
I just think if we don't contextualise the use of the flag and accept that the overwhelming majority fly it with pride and pride in their country, and there are always going to be rogue elements that will try and politicise it in the wrong way or use it in the wrong way, you can't let them win, can you? Because then if I decided to fly a flag at my house, are people going to think that I'm far right? Which is a phrase I don't really like using, but for the purpose of this conversation. Like, so I think it's up to everyone to ensure that it's called out, but that we can fly the flag without it being seen as something negative.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a symbol of cultural expression, after all, and it's something that has such a strong cultural element within our society. And not to forget as well, there was a point in our history where the flying of that flag was made illegal by that colonial element that you're referring to, Greg. So I think it's very important. Not only do we speak out against that, but we also position the Irish flag within its rightful place within our society and show that it's a symbol of a welcoming nature and a positive influence within our country.
Nicola Mahon, what do you think? Just unmute yourself, Nicola, if you don't mind. Thank you.
It's our national flag. I feel that it should be, we should, as long as it's being respected, and I don't see any reason for it not to be at the protest. The fact that the protest was aimed at the government and no particular group of people, it takes that out of the equation, I think. I personally feel that we shouldn't be questioned for flying our flag in our own country.
Yeah, and I really do understand what the senator perhaps was potentially trying to say, but perhaps didn't articulate it the best, because, you know, I think she would have known in saying it that she was going to be a lightning rod for criticism. She might have anticipated it from certain elements, more right-leaning views, but not from an awful lot of people that didn't like her comments, Nicola.
No, definitely not. As I said, as long as it's been respected, and I do feel that the protesters did respect our national flag, and yeah, they're showing a solidarity with the rest of the country who can't be there. They were there trying to do what's right for their communities and their businesses.
James, what do you think?
Well, I think it's very important not to allow the flag to become a symbol of division. Now, there was debates at Dublin City Council a few months back on whether councillors suggesting that we should go in and pull down flags from areas where they've kind of been put up, as you mentioned, maybe beside an IPAS centre, or they're used maybe to try and send a dog whistle to the migrant community. I think that's absolutely the wrong approach. I think that if you're going in and you're starting to take them down, you're giving them that meaning, that power of division. You're given essentially the people that would use it as a symbol of division what they want, because they can say then, look, they're tearing down our flags. You're not allowed to be proud to be Irish. You're not allowed to celebrate your own country, and we're being erased, and all this kind of divisive stuff that they tend to say. So I think people should be allowed to fly the flag proudly. I understand the sentiment, I think, of what Senator Arlene Flynn was saying. Now, I don't agree with her that the protests were overtaken by the far right. There certainly was a lot of far right elements, and I think they tried to hijack it. I don't think that they succeeded in that, because there was a lot of talk about events on the Monday that never materialized.
And I also think that just because someone who maybe, say, for instance, has a social media presence, they would be classed as sort of anti-immigration or whatever, because they go and waffle in front of a camera or make their points in front of a camera or whatever, I don't see how that has a reflection on the protests as a whole. I mean, they are people. They're. You might not agree with them, but they're there doing their thing. At worst case scenario, they're hitching the wagon, James. And if maybe that people don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, people have a right to express their views. That's, you know, healthy in any democracy. And you may not like it. You're welcome to disagree with it. But you cannot prevent a certain section of society from turning out and expressing how they feel.
I have never been to America, so I'm basing this mostly on stuff I've seen on TV. But in the United States, it seems, certainly in certain parts, there's American flags hanging out the front of, you know, every house. It's never framed, as far as I'm aware, as being, you know, non-welcoming or to intimidate people. Like, are we sure that people coming into this country are fearful or find our flag intimidating, Nicola? Do you know what I mean? Like, this is a big presumption. I've never really heard anyone sort of say that, oh, you know, that flag. The only person I've actually heard say that is Eileen Flynn. Do you know what I'm saying? I haven't heard it from those who would be, in inverted commas, targeted by it?
Well, Greg, it's the national flag of our country. Of course it should be flown. We go to any other country, any other, as you said, America, they're proud to fly their flag, and as should we. You know, it's the national flag, and it shouldn't be questioned, no matter where in Ireland it's placed.
It's interesting, because yesterday in the conversation I was having with Eileen Flynn and trying to understand what she was saying, I did try to articulate that it's this commentary that sullies the flag and maybe could make it become something it isn't. The majority of people just see it as our flag and fly it proudly. Okay, more from our guests. We have Keane O'Hagan, chair of Ogra Sinn Féin in Donegal. We've got Nicola Mahon, who you've just heard from, who's owner of Mode Embroidery and Print in Calais, and James Ward, who's the news editor at the Irish Daily Mail. Oh. I was sent a picture from Ballina, apparently. Diesel 179.9 cent, petrol 181.9. I wonder how much petrol and diesel I'd burn going down to fill up. But anyway, is that true? I don't doubt it. It could be a misprint, could it? Some of your comments here now. In America, they fly the stars and stripes outside most homes. Anyone who doesn't like our country's flag should go somewhere else. I'll fly my colours with pride as long as I'm living. Another, put up our flags and don't let others tell us not to. Other countries do, and yet we always go by others what to do, and our government listens not anymore. Greg, why would anyone be afraid of a flag of any colour? I think really the presumption is that if you were waving a tricolour at the protests, you were very right-leaning or far-right in your views. That seems to be what the situation is. It does worry me, though. I wonder, does it you, Nicola, that, you know, we're getting very American, I think, in our conversations. The language of the far left and the language of the far right, it's like a horseshoe, you know? I mean, I don't enjoy it. I don't like it. I don't take part in it. I like just being able to have a conversation, a polite conversation, agree to disagree and move on. But it doesn't seem we're capable of doing that any longer, Nicola.
No, I've gathered that myself. Also, I'm very much like yourself. I don't really understand far right, far left, you know, that kind of way. But it is the way it seems.
The way it seems to be, yeah, okay.
I would just run on this conversation and move on.
Have we lost, James, the ability to have, you know, reasonable debates? Or maybe, you know, we often talk about 5% one side, 5% another, and neglect the 90 in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're witnessing here, and it does seem that we're catching on to trends that emerged in the UK and the US with Trump and Brexit, but that the discourse has become more polarised. And I do think that social media is a major factor in that. I think social media is probably the most powerful propaganda tool that the world has ever seen, and we're still only starting to understand that in how influential it can be in shaping the things that we talk about and the way that we view society. And it does seem to have pushed people into this sort of, you're either on one side of the debate or you're on the other.
Yeah.
And nuance is kind of out the window.
And if you haven't, if you're in the middle, you have to wake up because you have to pick a side.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And there's no, like, it's almost like if you support X thing, then you have to support Y thing because you're on that side of the debate. You're on that side of the culture war. And I find it like there's people in towns and villages across the country that are living in parallel realities sometimes. You know, there are people whose algorithm and their Facebook feed is full of things about George Soros and the WEF and all these kind of mad conspiracy theories that has become kind of normalized to them, and that they, people who feel that in Ireland we're living under some kind of tyrannical government, like, and it's nonsense, you know. Sometimes you just think you need to go outside and touch grass.
Yeah, smoke it. No, I'm only joking, you'd never do that. Right, Cian, you've kind of, I'm not judging people by ages, I hate to do that, but you've kind of come into the more polarised sort of discourse, I think. I'm not saying, in other words, this is, I remember social media not existing, and then I remember it being fun and cats and stuff, and then I remember it turning into what it is now. Is it, are you on social media, Cian, much in terms of debates and conversations?
I am, absolutely. In terms of the like any public and in person debates that I've had up in university, I've been covered on social media. But in terms of getting into shouting matches with the likes of the presences on Twitter and Facebook, no, I don't engage in it. And I'd be very conscious of what we consume with regards to social media content, and the likes of vast conspiracy theories and unevidenced arguments that are put out there. I think it serves to be a very beneficial tool. I think it serves both to enlighten but also incite negativity within people. And I think that has to be recognized for the danger that it is. And I think that, despite being a member of this generation that is seeing the presence of social media take over vast amounts of everyday life and being used as a very practical tool, I don't always support elements that breed that sort of pessimistic viewpoint with regards to negative messaging, or rather forced messaging around trying to convince people to choose one side or the other. And as James said, it leaves a great void for that absence of nuance and proper detail when you're talking about specific issues. But I think as well, within Ireland, there's the precipitation of that sort of back and forth within social media has definitely been facilitated and exacerbated by the lack of sort of cohesion and sort of plain sailing of our current government. And that definitely has to be recognized alongside social media for the frustration embedded within people,
It's crazy too. You have to almost have two apps now if you want to sort of see both sides of an argument with, a lot of similar views on X and then a lot of different views on Blue Sky, for an example, and never the twain shall meet. Just one quick one, and I might put this to you first, Nicola, if you don't mind. And I'm not expecting you to be fully au fait with the details, but the question is general. Very popular Donegal local business, Fit Pink. Its owner has announced that they're closing down. And obviously, there's the general pressures on business and what have you. But I thought it quite interesting because they sell sportswear and what have you, that the sight of the likes of Temu and Shein and other online shops as being too hard to compete with. This whole fast fashion thing. Do we as the population need to be more switched on to sustainability and better quality products and be conscious that we're supporting local jobs in the economy, or are we just going to go, especially in a financial crisis, to whatever's the cheapest?
Yes, I am one that shops local. I will give that wee bit extra to keep it local. I'm not an online shopper at all. My children, I have twin girls who are 12, would go on Shein all the time and their basket is full, but do I buy in it? No, I don't. I tend to go either local or do without, basically.
Yeah.
I do believe, if we keep buying online, we are going to have no shops, we're not going to have jobs, and that is the scary thing about it. And it's community too, they've revamped many shopping centres, North Derry and Letterkenny in recent years. And it's lovely to go in around those and talk to people and get out and about and feel like you're part of a community and that you're helping people stay in jobs.
Yeah, my understanding of it is that for a lot of people, the house is like a fitting room. They order a ton of stuff, try it on. And then, send back what they don't need, or because it's so cheap sometimes. I presume a lot of people listening have something in a white square bag, about 12 by 12, sitting somewhere in the house that's never going to go back.
No, that's it. And the amount of money that they would waste by not sending it back, it's just shocking.
And you're telling me that you don't empty the girls' shopping basket ever?
I don't. You can actually measure. Honest to God.
What about Granny? Is someone emptying it?
No, my husband. No, they could get their father if he had a glass of wine.
Right. Okay. All right. We know his secrets now, right?
Tend to keep it local because even in our own community, a few years back, we had no shop, no takeaway, no nothing, and it was just dreadful. And so I tend now to pay a wee bit extra and keep it within our village.
I've tried Temu once. The postage takes too long, and there's nothing really on Shein that would suit my shape. I don't know about you, Kian. Have you any particular view on fast fashion versus shopping local?
Well, I'd have to concur that shopping locally has to be encouraged. That sort of communal nature in Ireland has to be promoted. And I think too the origins of fast fashion and the environmental impact that it has to be called out and underlined. It represents a very accessible element of consumerism within globally now. But I think as well, the exploitative nature of it and as well the environmental impact that it has, it's just not sustainable. And I think too, it definitely removes that sort of personable element associated with shopping locally, or just being meeting with people in person. It's not something that's purely attached to shopping and consumerism. Social media has definitely sidelined a lot of human interaction, and that's unhealthy. And I think that definitely has to be recognized for what it is.
Yeah, for sure. And we're starting to see generations coming through. I think that really it's their native way of living, and we'll see the full implications of that. James Ward, fast fashion. Do you do a try on haul for your TikTok followers?
I don't know. I don't have a TikTok account actually.
Okay.
I'm not much of a Temu guy really, but I agree with Cian that I mean the origins of this stuff and a lot of it is coming from forced labor camps in
Now,
China and
where
that
it
kind
ends
of
up, have you seen the way it's dumped in countries in Africa into just massive clothes mountains? It's shocking what we do with an
thing.
awful
It
lot of this
really is.
stuff.
And when you're at a point where the product is so cheap that people buy it without necessarily needing it or knowing that they probably aren't even going to use it, but just to try it on. That's a dangerous level of consumption, really, and it's a bit beyond the pale.
James Ward, news editor at the Irish Daily Mail. Always great to have you on the show. Thank you very much indeed. Enjoy your
Thank
weekend.
you, Greg.
All right. Nicola Mahon, owner of Mode Embroidery and Print in Calais. I think it's your first time on with us, is it?
Yeah,
It is. Brilliant. Hopefully you'll come back. We haven't scared you too much.
thank you.
And last but not least, Cian, thank you very much indeed. I think it's your debut too. We'll chat again into the future, no doubt.
Does indeed, Greg. Thank you very much. And just before we finish up, I would like to give a massive shout out to the staff and pupils of St. Union's College.
Yeah.
And I commend their action taken up with the various ministers in the Republic to secure the rebuilding of their new school. So I wish them all the very best.
Thank you very much indeed. Well done. Well said. All right. Now we're going to take a break. Back with more of your comments. But before we do, Mary T. Sweeney, of course, of Aintu, watching the show. She says a country's flag is their flag. Words speak, flags don't. Who are you talking about being far right? Well, I don't know if you're referencing me, Mary T., but you should probably know if you do listen. And in our conversations, it's not terminology that I generally use. But when someone is, is using that language to try and explain what they've said, you've had to say it. You have to say it. So, I mean, I find a lot of the left voices off, you could call them far left, the very, very extreme, but sort of left wing, right wing, and centrist is probably, they're not offensive phrases. So I don't know. I suppose the far right would be categorized, I don't know. I don't know how to do it. I don't use the terminology and I don't frame people in that way. So I don't know how to explain it. I can only use other people's words to make sure that I'm quoting them directly. Again, thank you to Keane O'Hagan, Nicola Mahon and James Ward. We do appreciate the time. Price of fuel needs to be capped, says a caller. Government have budgeted for what they expect to generate from fuel for the year. Anything over that should be capped. On Eileen Flynn, but really Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin are the reason why the Irish flag is being politicised all through the Troubles, and even to this day, it's erected in areas of Northern Ireland in order to cause division and fear. No political party has done so much to disrespect and abuse the tricolour more than Sinn Féin. And Sinn Féin at one time, and I mentioned it on the show yesterday, were accused of hijacking the tricolour. That's not a new argument. It's just now another group of individuals are being accused of same, not by Sinn Féin, but by some. I agree we can't let them steal the flag, but I feel like people are being like purposefully ignorant to non-natives on this. Like surely you'd not feel safe walking through a section of Belfast loaded with Jack's or George's crosses. But I would be perfectly happy walking through, well, perfectly happy. I wouldn't find walking through the streets of London with the their flag flying around London. I wouldn't be going, what, do they not want me here on my holidays? I think when you go to maybe areas of Northern Ireland, it can be certainly politicised. But here in this country, like it would be in Britain or France or Spain, you know, if you go to Spain, you know, if you see the flag flying, if you saw the Spanish flag flying everywhere in Spain, would you go, oh, I'm not welcome here? They don't, they're only about themselves. See, that's where I struggle to see the argument. But then I do try and put myself in a position of someone who's coming here seeking refuge, but I've never heard from them or that they find this intimidating. So you can see where it becomes complicated. I think we presume maybe that it's more intimidating, not we, some, than it actually is. I don't know. Right, I'm going to take a break. You can maybe think on that and get in touch with us if you want. Loads coming up. In fact, we are launching a really lovely initiative that's been running here on Highland Radio for the last couple of years. We're going to be launching that a little later on this morning. And Shannon's in with Scroll Patrol as well.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Okay, welcome back to the programme. Right, reaction to some of our talking points in the first hour. A caller says, holidays and living somewhere are two different things. I understand the point you're making, but I'm not living there and seeing what the locals are doing with the flag, along with the historical implications with things like the Troubles and how close the rhetoric from our lot is to the EDL, EDF. You can absolutely see why someone could feel intimidated. We've all gotten Get the Immigrants Out plastered with tricolours through our doors at some point over the last 5 years. And that is people potentially hijacking the flag. But if you try and lower the visibility of that flag, what do you do? Who's winning in that situation? I think you'd be far better off engaging with people, maybe in some of these centres, if that's who's being targeted or wherever they might be, and having a conversation and saying, look at, you know, some people are using the flag in a certain way, but it's our flag and it's not always used that way. I don't know. In relation to flags and intimidation, what about the streets in Northern Ireland painted red, white and blue and an iron statue of King Billy? Would this not be intimidating? They don't seem to care. Spain's a bad example right now, Greg. They don't want anyone there. Loads of anti-tourist protests year after year for nearly a decade now. Yeah, I understand. And, you know, the Canary Islands are the same. It's the same issues. It's housing. It's access to housing, etc. So, yeah, that is happening everywhere in the world. Would I be, if I went to Spain, well, if they started saying get out, I don't know. Hi, can you say hello to the SNAs from ATU travelling to Monaghan to help at the Teddy Bear Hospital? Well done, all you guys. Hopefully you have a safe journey. Greg, where do you think all your sportswear is made? At least if people buy from Temu, the factory owner gets the cash. I worked in this industry for quite a few years and visited a lot of factories where most brand names are made. Then we're charged an enormous amount of money, and believe me, it's not the workers or the factory owners benefiting. Yeah, as I was putting that point across, I'm not going to lie to you, that was in the back of my head. And I think that really came to the fore when the United States and China had a proper falling out, and some Chinese people, were taking a hand, you know, showing the bags without the branding on, saying, look, we're making this for such and such and you're paying such and such, etc. So, yeah, I think you make a good point. Let me go to Daniel now. Hi, Daniel. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. You're talking about tax and the cost to the consumer. What's your point, Daniel?
My point is, Greg, at the fuel crisis, the 60% taxes that we're paying in a fuel crisis, it could be, this whole fuel thing could be sorted out very simply. For the simple reason is, when you know the percentage of tax that you're paying on the fuel, that tax level could be taken back to a normal thing, like maybe 30%, 35%, rather than that 60%. Now, we have fuel coming into the country. We know exactly that fuel's going to go up and down from time to time, but the taxes shouldn't move. The tax should be at a level playing pitch, and 60% is far, far too high. It's going to put an awful lot of people out of business. But I'm afraid for that the farmers won't be able to afford to put on their crops. Then there's going to be a failure. Mm. That's going to affect everybody right across the board, from the housewife to the farmer to the people that's working in that particular sector of of the community. You know?
Yeah, and of course it's not just fuel, is it? Because now we're going to be talking about fertilizer, and there's, obviously fuel is important in running of some of the machinery that's vital to it. But you know, there are other input costs that farmers are going to have to factor in as well, which is very troubling, very worrying.
What the government's talking about now at the moment is that's going to end up with a paper trail. It's going to be more paperwork for the hauliers and farmers and people that's able to draw back that money. So if it was at the one price for everybody, like if you were living in Glencolum Kill, a man and a wife would say living in Glencolum Kill, one of them working in Letikinny and maybe the other one working in Sligo, they have to keep two vehicles. Look at how much it's going to cost them extra in the week. Let's be fair about them too as well. Like this is right across the board. If you take the elderly people living on their own, one person living in a house, they're not able to buy the fuel anymore. So I think it should be done on a tax level rather than on a price level, because it's going to be going up and down. Mm. As you know, fuel moves about from time to time. You take a barrel of oil or a barrel of fuel, it could be 75 cents. The next thing, it could be 120. So if you work it on a tax basis, on a figure, but that tax at 60% is much, much too high. And everybody knows that, and the government knows it as well.
But the government would tell us...
Now, but they can...
Yeah, the government would tell us, Daniel, that because of the cuts that have already been put in there, and the 65% tax, that's what it was before any of the measures were applied, so it is lower now, just to be fair. But they're saying now that because of these cuts, and if they continue, it's going to affect the help that they can give people in the budget in October. So under your plan, they would have even less money, they tell us, to, you know, increase pensions, increase social welfare payments, etc.
There's a lot of things on hand at the moment, different projects that the government's taking forward that they're going to be spending money on the next year. And I would say to them, look, forget about them things, put everything on hold for a while till we get rid of this fuel crisis. When we get rid of the fuel crisis, we can go back into normality and get on with the business again. We can't be paying out big grants for things in order to keep everything going. We've got to look about the people on the ground. You must start down at the ground where the people's been crucified for the want of being able to heat their own homes, and the people that's trying to get their children to school, and the people that's travelling long distances to work. Well, you've got to look about them people first. Can they start handing away with money and crucifying a large section of the community to do so?
There's
no logic in that.
Quite rightly, you talk about that, you know, farmers, hauliers, fishermen, and all that kind of stuff too. But, you know, there is another that other group of people, and you have referenced them. It could be a couple that are working in Glencolum Kill, for an example. They could be paying 1,200 or 1,300 euro a month in rent. You know, we don't talk about that anymore. Now, to fill up the oil tank would cost 1,000 euro for 500 litres. If the fellow or the woman in that house is a carer, it's cost them an extra 50, 60 quid a week in petrol. You know, there's very few people, I think, can sustain that, Daniel. You know, businesses might increase their prices. That's not easy, and it means they might not sell as much stuff. But for regular people with, as I say, we haven't talked about the rent in ages, but all of that, the home heating oil to and from work, like, you're working just to barely stay afloat, Daniel. I mean, what about them people?
It's coming to that stage where people's going to find it very hard to get the money to put the bread and butter on the table. That's how far it is gone. And the only way you can solve that problem is what I'm saying. Cut the taxes on the fuel. The fuel's going to be going up and down in price. So you can't say this, that we're going to charge so much for fuel, because you know what, the pumps, it's up and down all the time. So in order to get this over this crisis, you can raise it, maybe the rate of VAT at a later stage, or taxes at a later stage. Cut it back down to a normality and give the people a chance at this particular time and moment. There's a war going on out there, and it's escalating, and we must be prepared for it. And the only way you be prepared for it is leave a few bob in everybody's pocket for the rainy day, not stop them with it. These people didn't take to the streets with their vans and their tractors and their lorries and everything else. These people had plenty else to do at home.
It's desperation.
What a necessity to come there.
It was desperation and necessity. Okay.
Yeah.
Daniel, listen, thanks for your views. Well articulated. I do appreciate it. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and the text number there.
Turn the volume up now. Let's go. Could a Q show on the radio? Shannon's on the screen. A brand new scene. Scanning what the internet has seen. Oh, yeah. Click, click.
Yes, indeed. It is time for Shannon Wilkin and Scroll Patrol. So, social media is not just a divisive cesspit. It's also a place of fun. And you go through it and see what's what, what's trending, what's happening. Meet the Fockers. It's to do with in-laws, this one, isn't it? There's a new version of that film ad.
We first met Gaylord and Pam back in the day, and now his son Henry is dating an FBI negotiator. So Grandpa Jack is out again, has got the lie detector test out, but... Is he actually called Greg? He changes his name to Greg from Gaylord,
doesn't he? I haven't seen it, you see.
Greg Fokker.
I haven't seen it in a long time, you know.
I think his name is Greg.
Okay.
And he's not happy because he thinks that she's going to be able to manipulate.
Who's she again? Henry. I saw the... obviously, she's famous, but I saw the poster, but and I know who she is, but I can't remember.
Ariana Grande is...
Oh, yeah, Ariana Grande,
singer.
That's it, yeah.
And course. She was in Wicked as yes, well. She yes. played Glinda.
And she is the daughter-in-law.
Daughter-in-law. Well, that's not yet. There's going to be a proposal, so we don't know if she'll make the cut.
Yes, but the film is Meet the In-Laws.
Yeah.
Effectively, okay. That'll be interesting. Cameron Diaz and Sydney Sweeney, they're in a bit of a spat. What's going on here?
So I took this for gospel during the week, but then I did a bit of research it is fake news.
Oh my God, we don't like fake news.
We don't like fake news. There were rumours circulating during the week that Cameron Diaz had spoken out and said that she was hotter and prettier than... Sorry, Cameron Diaz was hotter and prettier than Sydney Sweeney.
Doesn't sound like something she'd say.
No.
And then, it's also not true.
It got me thinking then, like, who's pro-Sydney Sweeney, who's pro-Cameron Diaz?
I don't know. Well,
very
you see,
they're also beauty types.
They're also from two different generations.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if you people watched Cameron Diaz in the film she was in, you know.
Mask.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you might be more inclined. But Sydney Sweeney's the hot property at the moment. So there is no drama.
There is
so
actually.
So even your line here that you gave me is fake news.
Fake news.
Forbes 30 under 30, Irish creators. Right, so are these rich people or famous people or a mix?
A mix of both. So we've got some actors and we've got some business people. Some of them I knew, some of them I didn't. So I don't know, did you watch the new film Saipan, Joaquin, yet?
No, I haven't yet, no.
The actor Anna Hardwick has made the cut.
So this is about their influence, I would take it. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Don't think I'm going to make that list.
Do they have a 50 under? Oh, sorry.
Oh,
not
yeah, you
you're
have to be
in
under
the
30.
other age bracket.
No,
actually,
you're right. Sorry,
under 60.
I actually didn't realize it was under 30, or I'd never have opened up that can of worms.
Yes. And then the smooth company, Anya Kennedy, she does hair gel, wee wands.
Okay.
And
you
brushes.
Tried it?
I haven't tried it myself, okay. But Molly May has even tried her product.
Even Molly May, who was paid to do it and put it on our social media.
Oh my God, wow.
You know?
And her wee granddad, Billy, I think that's actually how she got famous. She is the cutest wee supportive granddad ever.
Lovely. Okay, so if you're on the, if you're Forbes under 30 Irish creators, well done to you. New recruit audio on TikTok. What's this? This is, I presume,
so
a trend that's going
that
on.
That is the man with the press ups there on WhatsApp. If
do we listen to
it?
Is there any swearing in it?
No.
Because you've told me not before. Right, let's go. Right, I'm getting tired looking at that.
This is a new fitness TikTok trend.
No, not interested in that at all. If you're watching, you'll see. No, that's no fun.
Basically, as if you were doing a plank, but you're also doing a star jump with your legs, but you're putting one of your hands out to hold yourself then back into the plank position.
Have you tried
and star
that?
Jumps with the legs. Yes, I did. And unfortunately, what lets me down is my hand-eye coordination. So the hands will be going a different way and every movement is really sudden. It's not really
okay.
Very good.
Listen, if you could do that, fair play to you. Kira Ryan is Kira Ryan?
She
again?
Is an influencer, so she'd be well known for her beauty stories and kind of crazy nights out, like meets guards and takes their hats and then meets them at festivals and like nearly falls in love with them, that kind of thing. So she was out with her boyfriend Tom last week, and they were out on a Thursday night, fair play to them. Corporate Thursday, apparently.
Out in a school night.
Yeah, and they went to the club. Club closed at 2 a.m. They were like, you know what? We want to party on. What will we do? We'll book a flight to Ibiza. So she says she went home. She was sobering up a little bit at this stage, had to reapply the fake tan, had to wash and blow dry the hair, pack. And this was all at like 6 a.m. and the flight was at 10
See,
to 11.
That's the great thing about being an influencer, because that's content. Right, it might sound dramatic.
Views, yes.
It might sound dramatic, and who would do that? But for her followers, I mean, that's brilliant content. Imagine being able to make snap decisions like that and monetize it. I'm so jealous.
But even imagine living close enough to an airport that you could just go.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I know that to be, because I do fancy myself sometimes as being spontaneous. But I mean, you can't hear, can you? You get as far as Monaghan and you turn around, and go nah.
Yeah, be like, that's far enough. I'm going into Hillgrove now. You know, booking in.
A handsome trucker has gone viral.
Yeah, so that's a wee photo of him there for anyone at home.
He looks a wee bit like Paddy McBurty, doesn't he? He's got that kind
of trying to think of a comparison to someone that he looks like, and I genuinely can't think of any.
No, when I saw the clip, or what's his name? Fury? Tommy Fury?
Tommy Fury, maybe. Irish Tommy Fury, but he's got the brown eyes, but he's got a big Irish head on him. I think it might be like the man in uniform thing.
Yeah.
He wouldn't personally be my type.
So he's gone viral for being handsome.
Yeah, he was part of the fuel protests, and he's from West Cork. He drives for his daddy's haulage company, Con O'Connell Transport, and he's actually done a bunch of media interviews afterwards. Cork's Red FM were on to him. He's got a girlfriend, by the way, in case anyone wants a new Cork fella, and he says she might end up dumping me now, but he says as well, because he's been out for so many days at that point, he says I look like a homeless man, like I hadn't slept or washed, and still women all over the internet.
There you go. And I'm sure a few lads as well. And lastly, joking children. What's this about?
I have the audio in WhatsApp here just because I was sitting at home on TikTok and it really gave me a good laugh. So this is just a
Where's
lift
the
for
audio?
Anyone at home. There's a video.
No, there isn't.
I'll have to send it again there. Sorry, guys. Technical difficulty. But basically, it's two kids sitting in the back of the car and they're absolutely roasting the daddy. And he's just like, you know what, kids? I think I'm going to have to make them walk to school from now.
Mom's like 25, and then Rachel's mum is 20, I think.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Dad, what age did you and mummy meet?
We were about 12.
12?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, wait, I'm 9, 10, 12. 3 years older than me. Oh my gosh, okay, wait. How long have you been together for then?
loads of questions. Should I keep playing it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's such a... Wait, if you and mummy didn't have any phones back then how did you communicate?
Dad used to write letters to mum.
He probably used the fountain pen with the feather. And you probably dipped it in ink.
That's trolling of the highest order. All right, brilliant stuff. Right, now, thank you. Look after yourself. We are going to break away now because we are... Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you very much indeed. That was Shannon's Scroll Patrol. We're going to be launching a lovely initiative that's been running on Highland for a couple of years now. So stay tuned for that. Sean Quinn's going to be joining me in studio. Time to launch this year's Community Hero, Highland Radio's Community Hero Awards. I'm joined in studio by our CEO, Sean Quinn. Hi, Sean. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good, good. And is this the third year or has it been running longer? Sometimes I struggle to keep track of it.
How could you start with such a hard question?
Oh, right. Sorry. Not my intention. It's been going for quite some
time.
It is the third year. Okay, I was thinking. So, the Community Hero Award, what's it about, Sean?
So what as you said, we launched 3 years ago, and what we wanted to do is we wanted to award people who never get the recognition for what they do. The people that are behind the scenes, the people that help in the community, the people that make that call at night to a friend or a relative or somebody who's sick or somebody who just gives up their time free of charge within the community. And what we wanted to do is look and see how can we reward these people, recognise what they do. And 3 years ago, we kept it a surprise. We went out and about and we got a huge, huge response. Very hard to choose three winners, but we managed to do it. And with a lovely, I suppose, gesture and donator who always likes to remain anonymous, what we do is we give them €1,000 for them, that they can go and do something for them.
The successful nominee, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's, do you know what, Greg? It's a lovely thing to do.
Do you know also these people that we talk of, and everyone knows them. I'm saying the same stuff I said last year, but it's quite true. But we come across them a lot on this show, as you can imagine, and as you know. They are the most unassuming of people. They're the most least likely to want to get recognition or praise.
Yep.
They deserve it, and we deserve to give that to them. And that's where the onus switches to the great public, the great listenership that we have, to nominate the person that you know who we're talking about here, that goes beyond the call of duty, that does stuff for no other reason unless they're no other reason other than they're a fantastic person. They're helping in the community. They're caring in the community. They volunteer in the community. They might work with marginalised groups or maybe the elderly or youth or any age bracket whereby people might need some extra support. They're everywhere. And this initiative is about finding six of them, that difficult choice, and just saying, you might not want it, right, but here's the thanks that you deserve, because we're deciding that you deserve the thanks.
Yeah, you couldn't have put it any better, because that's exactly what we're looking for again this year. Who is that person? Where are they? What are they doing? And how can we reward them? Because, and what we'd love to do is surprise them as well, if possible, and turn up somewhere and say, hello, how are you? You are a community hero. We want to, and we want to find out as much information about them as we can. Yeah. So why do they deserve to win? What is it they do? What is it that makes them special? What, you know, do they go above and beyond? I know every single letter I'm going to get in every email, every single person will be.
But, and the €1,000 is lovely, and it's a gesture. But the real prize here for me, I think, is the recognition.
Totally.
The thank you, the saying, you know what, we see you. We appreciate you and we thank you.
Absolutely. And do you know what? If it encourages other people to go out and help the way these people do, then we're doing a great thing as a radio station. And I think we help to deliver that message. Go out into your community, help the person beside you, be supportive. And that, to me, is critical in what we do and should do on a daily basis.
Yeah. Now, there are some complicated setups. I'm thinking home for Christmas, etc. This is not so complicated.
Nope.
Not to say there's not a lot of planning going into it, but you're just ramping up and surprising people, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to play some audio here for our radio listeners, and for those of you watching, you'll see it. And you're happy enough for me to just play this. This is an example of the surprises we've given in previous years.
Total little white lie when I came in the door, okay? Because I said that you were shortlisted for this, but actually, you're one of our winners.
What?
I was so blown away by your story. So we have your friends here that have got €1,000 check that from Highland Radio to you as one of Highland Radio's community heroes for 2025. And I think, in fairness now, Ciara, you put it so nicely. She's just an amazing person. And sometimes people don't get recognised for what they do. Today, your friends and our listeners are recognising you as a hero.
Thank you so much.
We've kind of shocked you on that one.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, hello, how are you? Does anybody know who I am?
No.
I should
know you.
That, you should know me. Well, I'm not here to talk to you today, but I'm looking for Laura Barrett. Where's Laura?
Me.
Hello, Laura, how are you? Hello there. You're thinking, what are we doing here to see you in a school?
Exactly.
So, Laura, we received a lovely letter from a friend of yours, Sheila. And what she done is she nominated you for one of our community heroes in 2025. And she told us all about the great work that you've been doing for the last 20 years with the Clohanealy Junior Band. And it's the youth band,
oh,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So from 10 years up to 80 years. So so tell me a little bit about that.
I'm put on the spot here.
Tell me what you do, actually. Why should you be a community hero for Highland Radio?
Jeez, I don't know. I should not be a community hero.
Hello there. Do I have Paddy Diver here by any chance? Have you any idea who I am?
No, I think I've been telling here.
I think you might have been, and Michael may just be in on it with nearly 1,000 other people, because Highland Radio is here today, Paddy, to give you a prize of a Community Hero Award for 2025. So congratulations. You look shocked. I've never seen you so quiet in all my life, having seen you in plenty of videos. So what does that feel?
Oh, Jesus. Listen, I'm appreciative for anybody that photoed me. It does feel bittersweet winning an award in a crisis like us, now, being honest. And I'm not too impressed with this boy standing beside me here because I've been totally set up here. But no, listen, hey, anybody that voted for it, thanks a million.
And not wishing to over-labour the point, Sean, but the reaction there from the people who were selected as winners, or as community heroes, should I say, it was nothing to do with the cheque that was being held. It was just like, wow, okay.
Absolutely. And
you know,
in fact,
which I think is lovely. And as, not to diminish the money, the money's fantastic. It's a lovely thank you. But the reactions, what we were seeing there was, it was about, well, firstly, who's this?
Yeah.
Despite your best efforts.
Yeah, I know. Incognito. In fairness, though, they were a school kid, so they shouldn't really know me. But
Paddy's not a school kid. You need to change your...
I'm going to change it this year. Yeah.
You may not know me, but I know who you are. Yeah.
I have a new line for this year.
But, was it Marie Fury, I think, was the first lady.
Marie was the first lady.
And that was in the beautiful setting of the Clanree. And it just was such a big deal for her. It was lovely.
Do you know what got to her? Is obviously she had her own story and she lost somebody in a car crash, but it was the effort that her friends went to nominate her and actually travelled as well to, some lived in Northern Ireland and they actually travelled up to be there on the day. And it was just so emotional for her. We actually stood outside for about 10 minutes because our car broke down on the way and we had to wait for her to come in. So it was just amazing, absolutely amazing. And then, of course, Laura Barrett, who works in the school in Fulcara, was a lovely, lovely young girl and does a lot of work in the background and was so deserving. It was lovely to do it in front of the school kids as well, live, and they all got the photograph taken with them. She became a hero within the school, but not just the community, so it was really special.
Right, so I don't think we could have articulated in any clearer way the type of people that we're looking for, and six people will be Highland Radio's community heroes. They'll be your community heroes. Now, this runs until the nomination process runs until Friday, the 1st of May. So you have a little bit of time, but don't dilly-dally, because you know the way things are. If we put things off, we don't get around to them. So get your phone out now, get your laptop out, and remember this email address, hero@highlandradio.com, or you can send them to us here at the radio station, Highland Radio, Manton, Top Letter, Kenny. There's no advantage whichever way you do it. It's just whichever suits you best. And we're not expecting you to be, Wordsworth either. But the more detail and more understanding of the person that's being nominated, the better. But you don't have to worry about commas and spelling. Just not get your information in there. And
And if you don't do email, you can write us a letter. We've every year we get numerous letters. They're lovely because they're very personable. They've been written by hand.
But it doesn't give you an advantage, although they like seeing the handwritten notes.
It's all about the story. It's all about the person, Greg. That's the key thing here. Why should they win? That's what we want to know. What is it they do and why should they win? And why should we go to them and find them and give them a surprise of their life and be recognised for what they do? And I just can't wait. It's going to fly. It's only a couple of weeks of a window. 1st of May will come very quickly. So as you said, if you can do it early, that'll be great.
And there'll be reminders between now and then.
Yeah.
Sorry, did I say six? It's three, isn't it?
It is three, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I beg your pardon. I've said six a couple of times. It's three. Three people will be our community heroes and each will receive €1,000. My apologies, but I think I said that twice. I don't know why. So email hero@highlandradio.com or send us a letter, Highland Radio, Manton, Top Letter, Kenny, and just put community hero at the top because it means it gets to the team absolutely quicker. Anything else you want to add? So we want to make three people, we want to give three people the shock of their lives.
Yep.
We want to introduce you to three people.
I want people to know who I am this time.
Who's this? What?
Guess who I am.
What did one of the kids say? Should I know you?
Should I know you? And no, it was really, he was a real character. He says, yeah. I think I do. And then he said to me, are you Paul McGinley?
Did he really?
He did, yeah.
I would have taken that. I was like, what? Yeah. I mean, he's not as good a golfer as me. You know, but... Okay, lovely stuff. Well done. So three people will be our 2026 community heroes. We want you to nominate them. We've given you the examples. You know exactly who we're talking about because they're people in your lives. Hero@HighlandRadio.com. And it's that unsung hero, and we want to sing their name from the rafters. Thanks, absolutely. Sean.
Thank you, Greg.
Appreciate
yep.
it yep. Very, very much. You were down at the GA breakfast.
I was,
morning.
Yeah. Great
What's
crowd.
The buzz down there?
Oh, great buzz. Yeah. They're, listen, it's all it's
Who's
all
speaking?
Positive.
Was Jim speaking? Mary
Jim
Coughlin
was. Donna Kelly was as yeah. well. Great speaker. Excellent. He's a big contributor to the old GA, but Jim was brilliant. You know, obviously. They're in the zone.
He runs the ship his way, and he has a plan. Jim has a plan.
Absolutely.
It's just about to kick off next week's offer.
It's a week on Sunday.
Next weekend, yeah.
And you know what? They were talking all about the end game, the plan to. And we have a great chance of actually getting a treble this year. That's reality.
So.
It's just. We're so lucky. They were saying that we're lucky to be where we are at the moment.
Everything
in
seems
a position.
To be in place, and
it does.
There's the conveyor belt. There's depth to that squad. You know, if a big player stepped away, you don't want them to. But the way he's put the team together, there's two or three fantastic players ready to step up and play fantastic on the biggest of stages.
And they're all coming back fit as well.
Yeah,
which is a great
stuff.
Time. So
and
a good position.
What was the breakfast like?
Do you know what?
No, the actual food.
It was lovely.
Okay.
Yeah, I finished it all too, and I had a couple of extra bits of toast on the side of it as well.
I'm starving. That's why I'm asking. All right, thanks, Sean.
Thanks.
Let me get to some of your comments now, Greg. You're so right about the Irish flag. Every country in the world is proud to fly their flag, and there's no question of it causing offence. It's extremely sad that the Irish people have to be divided on this, and it's a disgrace that the senator is representing the Irish people and calling them far right. How dare she? We are the Irish people and we are proud to fly our flag. Unfortunately, there are too many situations nowadays that people find offensive. We're told how to behave, what to say, what pronouns to use when talking to people. We're told to accept situations that we are not comfortable with. Example, unisex changing rooms. Does that happen much, by the way? I'm not trying to stir a debate in relation to that, but in terms of changing rooms or people with different biological sexes, I don't think that's a big issue here. I think it's a big conversation in Britain, but I don't think it's a big problem here. But this caller goes on to say, I think it's time the offended people get the help they need to overcome their anxiety and let the true Irish be proud to be Irish. I think what we have to do as best as possible is respect each other and each other's views and try and avoid the extremes of those views, but understand that that happens as well. And you know, I mean, I don't think any of us want to... No one's going to get their way. That's the bottom line. Let's just take emigration for an example. People might be against emigration, but this country is going to collapse without it because we're not making babies here. That's the bottom line. And we have an ageing population. And by the time, if I live to 85 or 90... there is not going to be enough people working to support, if things stay the same, to support the older population, let alone to care for them. So, you know, immigration is inevitable. What level of control is there? I don't know. It's up to you guys. But, you know, no one is going to get their way on this. So if you're against immigration, you're not going to win. And if you want open borders immigration, you're not going to get that either, right? So it's going to be somewhere in the middle, and that's the reality of the world we live in. Hi, says a listener, I wish the government would look at the everyday working family. We're a family of seven, both parents working, five children, and our oil ran out in January, and we've been without since. Between fuel costs and just buying groceries, we cannot afford to put the oil in. We have no fire in our home. We bought a heater for our living room and wrap up for bed with electric blankets. This is how desperate times are. I'm so sorry that that is your experience, but thank you for messaging that in, because that's the point I was trying to articulate a little earlier on. And, you know, you talk about falling through the gaps. I think this is typical. this is typical of a family that outwardly might look fine. And you know what, with the heat and the use of electric blankets, I mean, to some extent, probably kicking the can down the road, electricity bills are coming out for many people around about now. You know, how much is your bill going to be? That, I'm not trying to give you problems, but, you know, even our solutions are problems. And that's the scary side of the scary side of things. A caller says, I worry we collectively have lost the ability to walk in another's shoes to understand their perspective.
Yeah.
In general matters, we're there for each other. We have each other's back. Look, if there's a crisis in a community or someone falls on hard times, or we're fantastic. We come together, we rally together, and we support each other, and we are a wonderful, wonderful community. We demonstrate that all of the time. And that is why I think it's important that we understand, and we don't allow either people, you know, on the left or on the right, to over-amplify who we are. We know who we are, and we are great, and we look out for each other. St. Vincent de Paul is able to do the work it does because people are so generous helping people out. They don't care whether the people they're helping out are left, right, or centre, or wherever they might be. You know, so maybe we overemphasize the extremes too much, you know, and maybe that's part of the problem, and we should look at who we are, and we're great. I think we're great. There are people in the north flying Israeli flags. That's a lot worse, and no one complains about them. Again, this is about polarization, and who was it said a little earlier on? If you're for one thing, you're likely to be for another thing. If you're against one thing, you're likely to be against. Why people in Northern Ireland are bothering themselves one way or other with everything they have to contend with makes you wonder. Greg, should Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael call an election and let the people call what they want? Well, we had an election very, very recently, and people had their say then. So, I mean, how many elections can you have? You'll notice that only the far right will get defensive of being far anything because they're fully aware it's a shameful label, whereas I've never once seen a far lefty getting offended by a spade being called a spade. Another, I understand what your contributor is saying. There's a man posting videos of anti-immigration against mosques, and these videos always end up with the words, get behind our flag. But that is fine. That's what that person is doing, and that's for them what their flag, what the flag means to them. But they can't take the flag from the rest of us. You know, we have to be able to understand that. No, that's what that person's doing with their flag. That's what they're doing. But that doesn't mean that's is what our flag means. It's not what it means. It's what one person interprets it, you know, and there are people that might support that person, whomever you talk of, but it's not reflective of the entire country. Timu and Sheen, says the listener, aren't going to sponsor local events. Shop local. Everyone shopping online and then going to the local businesses looking for sponsorship and money for local events. Interesting point, a point I've made a few times on this programme. 60% of the cost is on tax. Why is it not being cut to make it more manageable? 40% might make things more level. I think, you know, there are taxes on the fuel. You know, we talk about rainy day. Well, I suppose a lot of the carbon tax on fuel is about the rainy day. People at the moment in times of crisis, I don't think are terribly interested in that. We live in the here and now. I saw a great sketch on the TV show whereby it was a bad guy and he had a lever and he says he's going to pull the lever and end the world. And there were three or four people go, no, 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 don't pull the lever. Don't pull the lever. Please don't. We'll do anything you want. And then he says, yes, when I pull this lever, the world will end in 56 years. And then all of a sudden the people were like, oh, right, so it's not going to end right now? Okay, well, you know, if you have to pull the lever, you have to pull the lever. And I think that's kind of a little bit like climate and other matters. People live in the here and now and they're worried about now, not necessarily something that might happen into the future. Right, just to remind you, Anne-Marie McDevitt's coming up around the Northwest after 12. Sinead Black will be hooking in live from Devers Hyundai and Vertiv as they have their Boil the Kettle appeal days supporting Relay for Life. But that's where me and the team leave it for today. Thank you very much to Caroline Orr, who researches and produces this show every single day, and also Shannon Wilkin working hard on the programme. We're back on Monday at 9. I won't be. Someone else will be. I'll see you Monday week. Anyway, have a fantastic weekend and life until I chat to you again. Look after yourself.